results are negative, what is the problem here? How are your operations done? What is it that you are lacking to break through? It's like I say, it's very worrisome. My second question is on page 16, where you talk of a number of personnel. What is that? It's very vague. What is that number? It's just like a by the way thing, you know. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bachi. Honourable Bele, and then Honourable Maoki.
Thank you, Chair. It's just one issue on my side, maybe just two or three small questions within that, and it relates to the first points raised by Honourable Mulubati, which is on slide 12. I just wanted to verify, am I correct that all of these operations and the ones mentioned in the other pages would be intelligence-led operations? So targeted location and what was sought was on the basis of information and tip-offs. And while I can accept that some operations, given the uncertainty in the field, might be a hit-and-miss affair, because some information maybe is unverifiable or there's time pressure to act on a tip-off before you can verify the information. For that many operations in a clump to yield negative results is a bit concerning, as the previous member said. So just to echo the question, what was the cause of this outcome picture? And maybe just to drill down to some specific possible factors. Is it a case of the quality of the intelligence information being received by the DPCI, which obviously points to the CI environments, and we know there's a whole mess going on there, and has been historically, or is it a case of the intelligence information is accurate and good, but then the criminal suspects get tipped off before the operation gets underway, thereby enabling them to move the illegal firearms or narcotics or whatever the case might be from the premises, which means that the information was good and worthwhile at the moment of receipt, but by the time it's acted upon, the situation has changed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Maoki.
Thank you, Chairperson. From the firearms that have been recovered, it's not some sort of operation, just a coincidence, all three of them, meaning that the real operation to recover all this weapon hasn't borne any fruit. And what worries me is that already those weapons are already in the hands of gangsters. So very fast. They are already in the hands of gangsters or of criminals. And that is worrisome. I wouldn't like to get into the operational whatever we call it of the DPCI. But when we say negative, it doesn't show whether it might be negative, meaning that the firearms were not recovered, but does it mean that some criminals have been arrested, or does it simply mean that nothing happened? I think that will be my question. Thank you
very much. Honourable Yomchek, and then Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. I think what is very, very clear
where all these gangsters, in, especially in the Western Cape, are getting all their guns from. I think it's, that speaks volumes in terms of the challenges that we are facing. But I have a few questions here in terms of what is the latest in terms of those that, I see you talk about suspension, but you don't talk about arrests at the moment. Are we still in the suspension stage where some of your SAPS members have been suspended and not gone to the stage where we've identified some of them have really with evidence that they could be charged? And if anybody has been suspended, I'd like to know whether these people are suspended with full benefits or not. You talk about an inspection that you made and found a whole lot of arms and ammunition that were missing, and the question is, how often is that inspection ought to have been done at the station, and was it carried out? In other words, were the processes carried out, or had you not gone there, and if you went there a month later, would nobody have picked up that until you went there? That's the other thing that I wanted to know. You have arrested some people in terms of you found them with stolen arms and ammunition, and you have also suspended some police officers in the stations. And I want to know if there's ever been any link with those officers that you've arrested to these those that you have arrested, and if ever any of the SAPS members together with the detective from a particular station that may have been investigating matters against criminals in those areas, and I don't know if you understand where I'm trying to get to, whether there's been some collusion there in terms of police officers or detectives in a particular station investigating matters against certain criminals that you may have found some of this ammunition with, and whether those matters previously that they might have been investigated might have either been withdrawn at court or so. So I'll try to establish whether there's collusion between that and these criminals, including these drug dealers and these gangsters. That was the next. It's that may have. But, yeah, I'll stop there for now. Thanks.
Thank you very much. You're the last. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. Chairperson, this is worrisome because all those firearms are stolen from the CSC and the SARS exhibits. How can it be, Chairperson? In slide 6, you said on the 2nd of September, you recovered a 9mm pistol in an unoccupied Manningberg residence. Did you check that place, who is it belonging to, or is still, and now is still unoccupied or what? Did you go back and check, and you check whose residence is it? My second question is in slide 8, on 28 August 2017, 18 various handguns that had been seized as exhibits were discovered missing from a trunk in the South Belville, South SAP 13 exhibit store. Who was working on that day? And who was having the key? And what I want to know, if you are, they are working shifts or what, did they not doing the handover? Because it can't be on the SAP 13 store. Pistols were stolen. My last question, Chairperson. You said you arrest people. Did you ask those people where did they get those firearms or where did they buy from? Because, Chairperson, police are involved and they are not telling us about the that they have disciplined people or people are suspended or what, Chairperson, because it can't be stolen things in the SAP 13 where there are people who are working, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Bijan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Seated here, listening to all the inputs from the members of this committee, it's very pathetic. When I look at General Matakata, she looks not, her face is not right. She's having a problem, according to me. And I should think she's aware that herself and the team, they are not doing good. They are not assisting us in any way. Because we are all talking about a dissatisfaction in this way or the other way. But then I just cannot understand, because the minister, Minister Malula, she's going from corner to corner and encouraging people to work, even telling criminals that we are after you, we are coming on you. And who is he indicating to be coming after the criminals? It's you, DPCI. It's your duty. Now, can you just explain cogently so that you fit the core function of DPCI, all of you, because I don't understand what is going on, because you are the backbone of fighting this crime. But it's like it's just let go. We are all not satisfied, highly dissatisfied. Expatiate on this thing so that we know and tell us if you feel you are fit to run this thing, because this cannot go on, really. We are banking on you, seated here. We are policy makers, and we expect you to implement, and you are not implementing as expected. I'm not singling you out alone. I mean yourself and the whole team. Month end, we all get paid. Come the report, we are all disappointed and highly so. So please, just try to deal with these issues here and today. Tell us precisely what is going on. Or maybe are you part of those criminals? Tell us. Then at least we'll understand if it's a syndicate that has gone deep into the marrow of DPCI. You tell us, we'll understand that you're part of that, but if you're not part of it, convince us cogently that you are going to do what expected of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Groenewald. Thank you, Chair. If the question has been asked, bear with me. It's raining in Cape Town this morning, so everybody stops to look at the rain. Chairperson, my question is that the theft from the safe from Mitchell's Plain. Can I have more detail on the procedure of the control of that safe? I suppose it was been stolen. Was it at night? Was it at day? Who was in control of that safe? And has that specific person or is in control of that safe been arrested? If not, why not?
Right, thank you, members. That's the questions. Remember, we've got still three further presentations for the DPCI. Let's get the responses. I recognize those answers. But I think one thing is there's some, let's say, management issues that's Western Cape-based that I think the DPCI can't deal with, and we'll have to get the Provincial Commissioner here to deal with those. But I think, generally, if you can deal with the investigative issues and the matters raised by the members, but we will need, to get the Provincial Commissioner here. But I'll give those two members also opportunity. But General Matakata, let's hear from you first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The first questions are coming from Honorable Malibati in terms of the raising a concern in terms of the pace and the three recoveries in 3 months, and how are the operations done? What is the problem? I think it's a very difficult one in terms of firearms that are taken from a police station. And unfortunately, as indicated by the chairperson, the management of the Western Cape is supposed to answer some of the questions raised in terms of the procedures at the station, because we're doing the criminal investigation. But they will respond to the procedures at the stations, what happened and who had keys and so on. But as I indicated, these incidents took place before we were even given the investigation in August. DPCI was requested by the Acting National Commission to take over from the 1st of September to take these investigations over. And such before that, obviously, there were investigations already taking place at the province by the PC, by his own team. Now, we had already lost some days in the investigation. That's the first thing that one can just indicate. And therefore, we had to take over the investigations from the provincial detective and start backtracking and going back and doing the investigations. But with firearms gone, obviously, and what is the picture that is coming out from the recoveries that have been done, the firearms are in the hands of some members of the gang. And it's not always easy. You need intelligence to really pick up to get to know where are the firearms. You need specific intelligence and information to go and find out where are the firearms. So it is a bit slow because we need to work with the intelligence and get to know where exactly are the firearms located. Because the firearms, as we can see, are not in one place, are already found in different, in an individual, from an individual, from one house, there and there. So this is a bit of a difficult investigation for one to, in 3 months, to say you have recovered all the firearms. But regardless of that, the investigation is taking place and these members are working. We try to highlight that there are operations, not necessarily the numbers that we think, but there are many operations this team is doing with in terms of trying to locate the firearms. And the second question was referring to page 16, saying we said the number of personnel, which is vague. And here we are just indicating that this is a departmental investigation by the provincial commissioner. Maybe the provincial commissioner would have been able to say what steps have been done. Well, there are a number of personnel at each station that were under investigation departmentally, not necessarily the criminal investigation we're dealing with. So we're just making reference to that with all that has happened, there is an investigation by the provincial commissioner, and a number of personnel are under investigation departmentally. Unfortunately, because the provincial management of Western Cape is not here to cover some of the issues that are at their disposal and responsibility. And the second questions come from Honorable Mbele, who referred to slide 12. And here also the question is more in terms of the intelligence that we are supposed to be provided follow through on the investigations that and the tip-offs that are coming through. And I'm sure if we look at it, we can see who are the role players involved in this investigation that went to do operations and search certain identified addresses. They referred to as DPCI, TRT, Johnstone disposal, and so on. There's no reference to crime intelligence here, so the information wouldn't have come from their side, but is operationalized by these different units. And information might come through sometimes, but then you find that it's negative. It's not where you were pointed towards, and it happens for various reasons. It might be, as you might have wanted to understand, is it probably the quality of information received or information was shared with those that you go to. So sometimes it happens, but when you go, because you have the information, you find that the information is negative. You don't find where you are pointed to, what items you are supposed to see at the place. So those are the challenges that you get with any operation and information that you might have received. Third question is from Honorable Mage, in terms of the recovery, where you're saying that the outcome of the operation is saying negative, and you want wanted to know what does that mean. Here we're talking of the information that when you were told there's a firearm at this place and you go there, you don't find that firearm in that specific location where the information was pointing you towards. So it's where we're saying it's negative because it didn't give you the firearm that you were told you would find in the specific area. The negative says exactly that you wanted to trace the firearm, but then the information was not given you the positive result. So nobody was arrested because there's no firearm in the specific area that you were told you'd find it in. Honorable Sheikh, your question around the suspensions of members and are they charged or so on, this is also for the provincial commissioner because this is a departmental investigation or matter where the members might be suspended because he conducted the departmental investigation, which is not really our part. We are just dealing with the criminal investigation. So in terms of the investigation, as I indicated, we might be able to link some of those members to the cause of the theft of the firearms and the missing firearms. But at this point in time, we would rather not indicate what is happening. But we would be able to link them because they say taken from a station, someone is responsible for it. The next question is coming from Honorable Muller on terms of slide 6. Where you have indicated you wanted to know in terms of the residence where the firearm was recovered from by the members from the station. And this incident took place the second day after we were given the investigation. So the members from the station found this firearm, but it was obviously someone tipped them off that there's a firearm at this back here in an unoccupied Melbourne residence. The investigation is looking at the questions you are asking, that who is occupying that place, who does it belong to. The investigation talks to all those things. So we will be able to determine if that house belongs to a certain individual there to account to the firearm that was found in their residence. Then the second question from your side, you asked about the day of the incident in terms of who was working on the day and the fees and so on. This is part of the investigation that we are dealing also with from a criminal perspective, the same way the departmental from the provincial commissioner side. They are dealing with that part. So it will lead us also to the individuals, and might the individuals are those that are suspended because of the activities that took place, whether you had the key on the day and what happened, why the key was in your possession. So those issues are dealt with in the investigation, both criminally and the departmental investigation. The next question was about whether these people are the ones arrested, do they indicate where they got the firearms? They do indicate in the investigation, in the interviews, we get to know how they got the firearms. But you have to trace it back to the station, whoever. So the investigation is dealing with those issues of where they get the firearms. Lastly, your question was on terms of the people suspended or charged, those who might be involved and work at the station at this time. Those are some of the people are suspended as the provincial commissioner would have indicated. They are suspended and then charged departmentally, but as I said, some of the things will link to the criminal investigation as well. Then from Honorable Mabija, the question in terms of raising the dissatisfaction about the investigation and whether DPCI is involved in the criminal activities and so on, and whether we are fit for purpose. I think we would want to say we are fit for purpose. We are doing the investigation. Unfortunately, it's the state who lost the firearms at the station. Ours is just to go and investigate how this happened. And as I indicated, if you lose from day one, in your investigation. You must take credit because you're only given the investigation on the 1st of September. Incidents took place in August. So for us is to work hard to get to even what happened prior to that process. So it's a lot that goes into the investigation. 3 months might be seen as if it's a short space of, it's a long time that we have not made significant recovery. But if these firearms are in the hands of criminals, it really needs a collaboration of intelligence that is pointing exactly where the firearms are and how you deal with that. So we are fit for purpose. We are doing the investigation in terms of where these firearms are located, working with all other role players that are necessary for us to do. But I can say with the way the incident took place, DPCI is not involved. Because the firearms got lost at the police station from the members that are waiting at the police station. DPCI is not sitting there. But even if DPCI members are involved in wherever the firearms are, we will be able to investigate and find that out eventually.
Yes, I want to complete because the big thing is, and I see that let's get all the responses out of our very short second round. Remember, we've got still 3 presentations from the DPCI side, apart from the case at end matter. So let's get all the responses. I'll come back with the members.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Lastly, the question from Honourable Kroonewald in terms of the Mitchell's Plain, specifically the incident there, who was in control of the safe and so on. The detail of who was in control of the safe would have been explained by the Provincial Commission, but we have identified who. Those are the people who are investigated, might be one of those who are suspended from a departmental point of view, the investigation from a departmental point of view, but also the investigation criminally would try and see if there was any involvement by whoever it was in control of the key to the firearms that went out of the station and got and went missing. So the investigation will be able to determine the involvement of any role player at the station, whether through the department or even through the criminal investigation, we'll be able to point that out. But at this point in time, I won't be able to give the name of who, but the investigations, both criminally and departmentally, know who is the key in their possession. Thanks.
Thank you, General. Maybe just on the issue of the management issues, we've arranged that we call the PC. He's apparently off sick, but he will send a representative. So when that person arrives, we can deal with those issues. So I'm going to allow Honourable Mutlongu, Honourable Imam Sheikh, Honourable Monabatsi, Honourable Bija, Honourable Mabele, you the last one on this issue? Yeah. I just want to, again, members, if I can allow more questions, but then I need the commitment that members will be at one. So it's fine. Let's continue on more slowly.
No, sorry again for coming a bit late. I think Chairperson noting that I think we need to put this report in abeyance for a while. I'm saying that, Chairperson, because last week you recall that we had a meeting with police, particularly on the upcoming firearm amnesty, and we grilled national police management on the handling of state firearms, including those firearms that we are requesting members of the public to come forward and surrender. And we raise these concerns. And Jefferson will recall that I raised the point that sometimes back that in one of our national key points, the international airport, when I visited Cape Town, when I was coming from Devon, I was really shocked to see that the entire airport riddled with bullets. No interception of those guns. Even the one who was shot was taken away by those guns without even police reacting to that. That tells you that you have got a problem here of dirty police that are actually working as hit squads, which this committee must definitely deal with and clean them. I understand that the DPCI is doing some kind of low-key investigation. To me, it's low-key investigation, Chairperson, this. Apart from national, apart from provincial commissioner, the national management chairperson, I plead with you that the general who's responsible for firearm control and management must be part of that meeting. And so that we get standing orders. What are the standing orders that apply to the police officers at station level in terms of firearm management, and also ensure that we get multidisciplinary investigation to deal with this particular thing here? You cannot have such crooks, and then you get a low-key kind of investigation, which is not really a seeking to crack the syndicate that exists here in Cape Town. It's very dangerous work. We will be putting lives of innocent people in danger, allowing police to go amok with criminal activities openly. But the people tell me, Jefferson, that in the international airport, police were just wondering, why wasn't that man killed? And all that. Who came on the scene? Now, Jefferson, let's get the general who's responsible for firearm control together with, so that we can be able to take decisions and clean policing in Western Cape. I plead with you, Jefferson. Otherwise, we are going to get these so-called investigations. To me, if a person has been caught with a state-owned firearm, that person must point out that I got this firearm from this police officer. And that police officer should be behind bars as we speak, not even suspended. Those people are a threat to humanity. They are a threat to humanity. Suspending them is not even a solution to this. These are criminals who are infiltrating the state, who must be dealt brutally. I don't really think that we'll be doing justice, Jefferson, by just allowing this thing that investigations are going on when lives of ordinary people are in danger through people who ought to be protecting the members of the public.
Mr. Long, you will recall last week we indicated that we will recall the firearms register to come to the committee. We even invited them tomorrow if they are ready to present the firearms amnesty process, but we haven't had any communication. So they will definitely come back, so rest assured we will have that discussion. Honourable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it comes back to what we've always been saying, that most illegal firearms were legal firearms at some stage before, and I think the stats is what, there's about at least two of them getting stolen every day from a police station. But Chair, my concern is on this one matter in Belleville South where we talk about the theft of 18 exhibit firearms, and I don't know whether you're going to be able to answer whether it's a correct platform for this. I wanted to know what was the impact on those matters before the court if 18 of this exhibit firearms have actually disappeared, and whether when these things went missing, were there a whole lot of firearms, or was it specifically 18 that were taken from a lot, or the entire lot that was there? Trying to just get a clearer picture of whether it was intended to protect certain criminal suspects. Thank you.
Imam Sheikh, Honorable Murabachi.
Listen, whilst I understand the frustrations of General Matakata, I want to register this, that three firearms in 3 months is weird. The person is equal to one firearm in a month. Does it mean the remaining 30 will take 30 months to recover? It's still not enough. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Mula, are you covered? Honourable Mabija?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm still not convinced, unfortunately, General Matakata, that you match the function, you and your team, because for us to be seated this side, we are seated that side, you present, we only ask you this, but what we need is not to ask you questions and you come up with answers. We want to see action. It's unfortunate maybe because the former General X would sit there and give us what we want that assists us and the community of South Africa. And here we are, asking questions, you are answering. The report is so weak, it's like you are not there. It's like the team is not there. Maybe it's because we are comparing with the former ex.
Well, maybe we shouldn't be personal.
I'm not personal, chairperson. I'm not personal. When I say General Matakata, I mean the position. I don't mean her as a woman in a certain position. I'm not personal. I'm trying to speak out my feelings because really, DPCI is failing us this time. It's just unfortunate Mr. X came across his own things and he's not there. Otherwise, we could have been far. I'm not satisfied. I'm feeling very much uncomfortable about what is happening now. Like Honorable Molevati is indicating, one firearm per month. That is too bad. You are telling us that you are unable as a team, not as a person, as a team. And you need to not answer questions, but to tell us what is it that the team is lacking so that we can assist, because what we want is to see action. You see, I don't know how to go further on that, but I should think deep down the teams had you understand what I'm trying to put through to yourselves. Just feel that with us, we are not fighting you. We want work done. We want the coffers of this government to bear fruit. The budget must match the action and the results. That's all we are fighting for. ANC is fighting for them. ANC is fighting for you to protect citizens of South Africa. That is our core function as seated here. Not to answer questions, to ask you questions on your presentations and you come depending on who has more reasoning power to answer or to ask questions. We're not here for that. We want action to save South Africans. That is the core mandate of ANC in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mabuja. Honourable.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I just felt like I had a flash forward to your December conference at some kind of working group, but nonetheless. My question is just to springboard from...
Honourable Mbele is out of order.
Yeah, members, let's continue. Let's not go there.
I'm not a clown. And I don't deserve.
Chair, may I then suggest that we keep the space of the committee non-partisan and not bring party political rhetoric into it?
But members, let's go back to the main business of the day. We must deal with...
Absolutely, because time is running out. Thank you, Chair.
So,
on the matter of crime intelligence...
I think this must never be allowed. This is... The
statement I'm responding to should not be allowed itself.
We are not going to be provoked and you expect us to shut up.
Members, please, let's tone it down.
This is uncalled.
Let's continue. Thank you. No, let's continue. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm gonna keep the high ground and revert to the matters at hand. On the matter of crime intelligence, as General Matakata has alluded to. So it seems quite evident that most of these operations where it's not stated explicitly crime intelligence was not a role player. I see Manenberg crime intelligence only stated in the October operation, the third one. And one would assume that for investigative work of this nature, it's quite clear that an organized element behind this phenomenon, one would expect that all operations are intelligence-led, ideally on the basis of quality verified intelligence information. So if my deduction is that that was not the case in the majority of operations, which would then explain the large number of negative results, and I heard the general say, make the statement that DPCI needs the collaboration of crime intelligence, is she and her team satisfied? Do they find the level and quality of support from crime intelligence, especially in these investigations, but any others would also be relevant? Is it adequate, satisfactory, consistent, and up to standard for enabling your investigative work to yield the kind of results you need? That's my only question. Thanks, Jim.
That's all the questions. Thank you very much. General Matagata, if you can just wrap up this session. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Chair. Honorable Mtongo, I don't have answers. You just stated what needs to be done, so I won't respond to that. You wanted the Divisional Commissioner to be part of a further engagement on the firearms. Honorable Sheikh, your questions around the exhibit firearms in terms of Bella and the impact before court, and I think that we can respond to in writing rather, because this is an investigation that is ongoing, so that we don't say things now and yet might be not what we wanted to impact with the committee. That is acceptable. In terms of the Honorable Malibati, the comments again on the 3 months, I think it's a bit difficult to really explain the difficulty in getting firearms out of the hands of criminals, especially the gang-affected areas. But it's something we're working on, and it's unfortunate because after this presentation, we'll be presenting the work that has been done by the same unit on the firearms. Maybe that would give a better picture, because this is not only what they are focusing on. This is one of the priorities in terms of recovering these firearms. But maybe the next presentation will show that there is work that is being done by this team and the number of firearms that have been seized. So it might give a clearer picture in the next presentation. And again, in terms of the statements that are made, in terms of the dissatisfaction by Honorable Mabija, I would just indicate that perhaps in the next presentation, the work that is being done by this unit is not just confined to this that we see now. The picture will indicate, obviously, they are looking at firearms broadly as well. So I won't comment on the other issues, but all I was going to say, the team that is working on this is fit for purpose. They are doing major investigations on the firearms that went missing nationally in the country. So it's not just necessarily this that we see, but they are doing an excellent work because of the investigation that they do on Project MP. The firearms that were discovered would have been used, again, allegedly in the gang incident, but the firearms were supposed to be in the stores nationally in the country. So they are fit for purpose. They are doing this work. I want to assure this committee that this team has that capability. And then the comment from Honorable Mbele and the question, I would also ask the acting national head in the province to respond, because it needs to be clear the working relationship that is existing or not existing between DPCI and the crime intelligence in the province, and to be specific to this matter. I think it would be
Thank you, Mr. Chair and honourable members. Brigadier Oliver, acting provincial DPCI. As alluded to, that we followed a multidisciplinary approach as legislated by law. Our interaction with, and more in specifics with, the firearms is at high level, myself, which includes myself and General Teo from the Provincial Crime Intelligence. This relationship also cascades down to the operational level, that members have been, at least two have been allocated to our team, and they are interacting with the information and dealing. With regard to the quality of the intelligence, Mr. Chair, yeah, not all intelligence information reads the objective. It doesn't always mean that the quality is not at a certain standard. Because what we found, sometimes you get information from, whether it's from crime intelligence or from your sources, and it's not 100% correct, but you have to act. You have to follow up on information, and sometimes it leads to the negative result as indicated in our presentation. The difficulty with this type of cases, and we need to be honest here, you have corrupt cops, criminals, that's in our environment, that linking up with gangsters. This means it's highly difficult to make certain inroads. And I hope that the this committee can appreciate that. Myself also, I'm personally involved with certain sources, specifically with Mannenberg. Because, Mr. Chair, I come, if I may mention this, I come from Elster River. I grew up. This has a social strata as Mannenberg and Mitchell's Plain. And this theft of the firearms touches me personally. And I can guarantee you, one Friday night, the one drugs that people found in Mannenberg, I got information from a source. We activate the people. Unfortunately, we didn't get a gun, but we get drugs. So this is one example I want to show to this committee, us and criminals, we can do go out of our way, because one gun, possibly one murder, possibly one child, possibly one mother, and we take it very seriously. With regards to crime intelligence, obviously, General, is that they are mandated to assist us, and we will continue to do so on a daily basis. You will also notice that certain operations were done even as far as Saldana and Impal. Now, every bit of information, every bit of intelligence, we need to follow up. Doesn't mean sometimes it concludes in a success, but we had to do. That's the nature of the game. So yes, Mr. Chair, there is cooperation between us at the high level and to the lower level as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, that deals with that presentation, but of course we will wait for the other general from the Western Cape and deal with it later or tomorrow. We'll just see our time pans out today. Let's go to the second presentation, if we maybe can go to the two units and then also do the illicit flows as well as the minerals in one slot. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. I would ask Brigadier Cardwell, you will take us through this presentation and the next one. Thanks.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, good morning, thank you very much. Okay, the main purpose of this presentation is to praise the Portfolio Committee on Police regarding developments on both the South African Narcotics Enforcement Bureau as well as the National Bureau for Illegal Firearms Control and Priority Violent Crime within the component Serious Organized Crime Investigation within the Hawks. As you obviously know, the establishment of both these bureaus came into existence during February 2016, during the responses by His Excellency President Zuma during the State of the Nation address.
We'll just check with the Secretariat to ensure that members get a copy. Thank you. You can proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So interim capacity has been placed nationally to deliver on this mandate, and there has been successes in relation to the arrest as well as seizures since the inception of the
this capacity. Now, in terms of the national strategic focus areas, SANEP has adopted a threat-based approach and an integrated approach to effectively and holistically address the entire drug supply chain by focusing on the following operational focus areas. Firstly, on drug outlets. Secondly, on the illicit cultivation, illicit production and manufacturing, human couriers, drug trafficking networks, and emerging trends. I will elaborate further in the presentation on how we are positioned to address each of these focus areas. Now, earlier this year, the Hawks, together with NICOC, were able to convene a meeting with the entire law enforcement fraternity, specifically to see how we can better position ourselves to deal with supply reduction strategies. And through that engagement, we were able to look at how we can be able to really deal with supply chain networks. So a generic five-level value chain was developed to outline the criminal business systems of drug supply networks. And as you can see, at level one, we're dealing with drug outlets. Second level is regional drug distributors, then national drug distributors. Then we are dealing with the illicit drug production, both the manufacturing as well as the cultivation. And at the apex, we're dealing with international drug trafficking networks. And then when we looked at each of these levels, we were able to further explore how we can better understand what is happening in each of these levels. You can go to the next slide. So for example, if you take drug outlets, we're looking at all the elements that will consist of drug outlets. For example, the runners, the clubs, the street dealers, and the dens. We have then looked at what are the enablers, what are the challenges in each of those levels. I'm not going to elaborate further for the listening, but surely questions can be asked in that regard. Then for SANEP's interim capacity at national and provincial level...
Chairperson, sorry, point of order. Chairperson, no, we don't have the presentation. Not one of the members have it. Yes, we can follow there, but I mean, there are finer detail we just don't have. It's as simple as that. So why don't we have the presentation?
Yeah, I think what we will do, because I understand the concern from the members, let us give the secretariat the opportunity to get the necessary copies ready, and let's deal then with illicit flows as well as the mineral issues. Then we can keep that in abeyance, and then we can deal with that when we've got copies. No, I agree. Right, let's then switch back to the other two. Thank you. Does members got copies of the illicit flows? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to lead on the illegal mining, and then my general will lead on the illicit financial flows. I'll start with the mining, if you can do it that way.
Okay. Maybe just members to indicate to those who maybe join us later, this is a follow-up from the joint meeting we had with the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Energy some 2 months ago. And we agreed with them that we will on a quarterly basis also ask the PCI to give feedback to this committee. And we might also have again a joint committee meeting next year. And then the issue of the illicit flows that will be handled by the Brigadier also flows from the joint meeting we had with the Finance and DDI committee also, I think, a couple of weeks ago or a month or two ago. So that's also issues that we already dealt with. Right, thank you, Brigadier.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you very much. So the main purpose of this presentation is to appraise the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Police regarding the overview of the illicit mining landscape impacting South Africa and our collaborative operational responses in curbing the scourge. During the previous sitting on the 25th of August 2017, the Portfolio Committee on Police and the Department of Mineral Resources were respectively briefed on the operational successes covering the period April 2014 until March 2017. Therefore, this presentation will primarily reflect the operational performance between April and September 2017. The National Coordination and Strategic Management Team is led by the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation and coordinated by NICOC, while the Department of Mineral Resources chairs the Free State, Gauteng, Mpumalanga and Northern Cape stakeholder forums to address the challenges at mines and at community level. The NCSMG has a strategic plan covering the period 2014 until 2019 with three specific objectives, namely to coordinate and consolidate government's efforts in combating illegal mining and the illicit trade of precious metals and diamonds in partnership with the private sector. The second one is the regional and international cooperation to address transnational organized crime relating to the illicit trade in precious metals and diamonds, and finally to mitigate illegal mining and the illicit trade of precious metals and diamonds across the value chain by detecting, preventing, combating, investigating, and prosecuting. In terms of our governance structure, the National Coordination and Strategic Management Team is the steering committee that coordinates all efforts targeted at combating the scourge of illegal mining and all related matters. It interfaces with other JCPS structures, such as the NAT joint at the national level, and reports to the JCPS DG's cluster. Provincial forums, such as the Provincial Operations Committees, interface with the prof joints. Furthermore, interface with the private sector takes place through the Mine Standing Committee on Security, which is also represented at or in the NCSMT. The NCSMT has subcommittees that focus specifically on various aspects such as intelligence, legislative review, and the international strategy. In terms of the illicit mining program, the scoping process established that illegal mining has interlinkages with other forms of transnational organized crime and impacts on various sectors. It is linked to human smuggling and trafficking, as 70% of arrested illegal miners are illegal immigrants from neighboring countries. These include minor children. Women are also smuggled underground for prostitution purposes. It is also linked to illegal weapons and explosives, as illegal miners arm themselves, steal explosives from the mine and use them to booby-trap certain areas underground. There is a likelihood that similar explosives are utilized in ATM bombings. The level of violence amongst illegal miners manifests in fatal shootings on mine employees, where we find turf wars and armed robberies between the Zama-Zamas. The impact...
Yeah, Brigadier, just a moment. Remember, Brigadier, most of this presentation is really a repeat of last time. So I think if you maybe can go to the salient issues that's related to this two final quarters, let's do that. I mean, members are welcome, of course, to ask questions on the other slides, but I mean, it's partly a repeat of that presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I thought for the benefit of members that may not have been there and may have questions to have done it comprehensively again, but thank you. So I will move to the slide relating to identify the hotspots. So the identified hotspots are in the six affected provinces as follows. In Gauteng, we have 13 hotspots, as you have it in your presentation. In the northwest, there are 12 hotspots. In Mpumalanga, there are three hotspots. It doesn't include the Evander one. Then in Limpopo, there are two hotspots. And in Free State, the epicenter is Welkom that we're dealing with. And then in the Northern Cape, due to the geographic vastness and naturally with the historical diamond mining operations, it is basically stretched across the length and breadth of Northern Cape with nine hotspots. I won't go into the key developments. I think those things were covered. Now, in terms of reflecting on the first quarter, in terms of the reports we get from the Chamber of Mines, the extent of illegal mining activities within operational mines gleaned from data supplied by the Mine Standing Committee on Security indicates the persistence of these activities, including incidents of theft or possession of copper, theft or possession of gold-bearing material and platinum group metals, and the contravention of the Explosives Act. During the period under review, the mines recorded 52 incidents of copper cable theft, 126 of underground illegal mining, mainly at Harmony, 57 of theft or possession of gold-bearing material, and 2 of surface mining, as well as 6 explosive-related incidents. For the platinum mining sector, they recorded 134 incidents of copper theft or possession, 18 of theft of PGMs, and 1 related to explosives. And in terms of losses, the gold mines suffered a loss of 1.283 billion, while the platinum mines 1.712 million. I will now talk about one of the burning issues, naturally chrome, and I'm going to, this was not in the previous presentation. So during 2016, the illegal mining of chrome emerged in the Limpopo area. The mining of chromium reserves in South Africa is relatively easy, as it is done on surface. The area between Atok and Steelport in Limpopo is one of the richest chrome reefs in the world. The mining is conducted by local unemployed youngsters and old ladies in most instances. The women and children are working in harsh conditions without the correct tools, mainly using their bare hands to separate the chrome from other stones. The nexus between land ownership and mining rights are also manifested in the illegal mining phenomenon. Some traditional leaders who own surface land rights in the area reportedly grant community members permission to mine in certain areas. They believe that the land belongs to them. The evolution of illegal mining scourge, coupled with its constant displacement, escalates the threat level of this phenomenon. Illegal chrome mining further exacerbated by policy and legislative uncertainty. Now, between January and October 2017, the Limpopo Chrome Task Team, led by the Deputy Provincial Commissioner for Detection, recorded the following successes. There were 69 suspects arrested, 11 trucks with trailers, another further 22 trucks, 2 LDV buckets, 23 items of assorted mining equipment, 17 excavators, 2 illegal firearms. And most of these operations were directed at the more commercial scale of the illicit chrome mining. Now, what are the interventions that we have to mitigate the threat? I think I did give that on the previous occasion, so I'm not going to go on slide number 19. Slide 20 I'm also going to skip. Now, in terms of the international strategy, what I would like to maybe indicate is during the next Commission for Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice, in follow-up to the resolution that we have already previously tabled, we would like to again table a new resolution on combating precious metals trafficking. As I've indicated, in most countries around the world, especially the illicit markets, precious metals is not necessarily illegal. So we need to be able to really get the support of the international community so that they can look at this as a transnational organized crime activity. In terms of public-private partnerships, it is very key in addressing the threat. The private sector is involved in all provincial and national structures established to deal with the threat. The role of the private sector is critical, and in South Africa, their participation culminated into the enhanced coordination of efforts within the sector to improve security within respective mines, thus securing the precious metal supply chain. For example, the private sector sponsored the Rats Refinery embarked on a process of securing the supply chain by amending its regulations to help implement measures to ensure the origin of all gold received by the refinery. So that is basically a dynamic process with engaging with private sector stakeholders so that we can do target hardening in those areas. And in terms of the operational statistics, and that is what we are primarily accounting on, for the first and second quarter for 2017, a total of 55 disruptive operations were conducted. And in the first quarter, there were 116 arrests, and in the second quarter, there were 358 arrests, and we have three active intelligence-led projects at the moment. I'm not going to go into the details. I think it's basically self-explanatory. And then also for the second quarter, it's basically a breakdown of the nationalities that we arrested, and you can see it confirms the three neighboring countries within SADC, where most of the Zama-Zamas are originating from. And in terms of seizures, operations targeting at all levels resulted in seizures of precious metals and diamonds. Gold, including unrobbed gold with a value of 4.85 million, rough diamonds worth 155,000 and platinum worth 143,000, and chrome to the value of 143,000 was seized. In terms of dealing with the higher levels, as you can see, we have three current projects registered, and we have 16 ongoing major investigations. And looking at some of our operational case studies, we had a project in the Mpumalanga province called Project Pontius, which was initiated in June 2016, and it was focusing against a criminal group involved in the theft and dealing in unwrought precious metals. On the 30th of August this year, a coordinated takedown operation was conducted by the DPCI together with the TRT as well as our other key partners. Six of the identified suspects or the targets were arrested. We've also managed to dismantle a smelt house. There was an assortment of mining equipment that was seized, and in total, for the duration of this operation, there was 445 kilograms of gold-bearing material and eight pieces of unwrought gold with a value of 169,000 rand that was seized. And looking at the issues very much pertaining to the Zama-Zamas, in the Evander gold mining area, which is one of the identified hotspots, so very much our operations are targeted and directed to try and address those identified hotspots. So during that operation on the 27th and 28th of July, which was conducted in various areas within Greater Evander, 166 arrests for contraventions of offences such as illegal immigration, illegal mining, trespassing, and the possession of gold-bearing material. In August 2017, at Matole informal settlement near Krugersdorp, is also one of the areas infested by illegal miners. The said operation culminated in the arrest of 35 illegal immigrants and one for the possession of GBM. Smelt houses were also dismantled and equipment seized. Total value of about 5 million rand worth of GBM was seized. And there has been also other operations around Gauteng, for example, near Denver Hostel, where we have seized gold-bearing material to the value of about 800,000 rand. Then in terms of convictions, for the first quarter, we recorded 264 convictions, and in the second quarter, 203 convictions. Then with the emerging trends, this is a very dynamic and fluid situation where we are finding certainly the Zama-Zamas are able to become more adept, and basically also you find displacement in terms of Zama-Zama activities. So one of the things we're finding in the Northwest province is, as you know, they will be going to abandoned farms where there is prospects of finding diamonds. Then there is naturally hostility against any law enforcement activity, and naturally they're again manipulating the industry in terms of being able to integrate the gold as well as the diamonds that they are able to get. Now, the issue of the constraints was touched in the previous presentation, but again, the issue relating to corruption And naturally, the complicity is one of the key challenges in dealing with this. Now, it wasn't in September, but during October, during our NCSNT sitting, we basically had very serious concerns raised by the chairperson as well as some of the key listings regarding the lack of contribution in addressing the threat by certain stakeholders. So in this regard, to try and see how we can turn around and improve this, we are organizing a session during the latter part of January 2018. And also to ensure that within the police that we can be able to really fire on all cylinders, the National Crime Combating Forum was recently briefed regarding the illicit mining situation and the assistance that we are seeking from other key operational divisions within the police so that we can be able to deal with this more systematically and methodically. In conclusion, to the Honourable Chair and the Committee, we would like to reaffirm that the DPCI, together with our key stakeholders in the NCSNT, remain committed in tackling the illicit mining threat, and naturally our ultimate aim is to significantly reduce the illicit mining threat impacting South Africa and to ensure that we can more systematically disrupt and dismantle the criminal groups orchestrating illicit mining activities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brigadier. General Matakata, maybe the next presentation is it. Close. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The purpose of the presentation is to provide feedback to the Portfolio Committee on police about the illicit financial flows. To follow up on the previous report. This is just a breakdown on the cases as it is and what the current status of it is. Nationally, there was 60 cases on hand. 3 cases have been finalized in court during this period. 6 other cases were either withdrawn or closed as filed. 4 of these cases were closed as undetected, and where there was not cases registered but inquiries, it was closed as negative, meaning it did not bring anything criminal about. 38 cases are still under investigation. 1 of these matters are court-bound from trial, and 4 of these cases are trial-ready, meaning it is now investigation has been completed and submitted to the prosecutor awaiting either summons to be issued or the court date to arrive. And 4 of the cases are currently on the court roll. Then, Chair, on the next slide, it is simply a breakdown of these cases per province. I do not know whether I need to drill into. And just as the only new matter that of noteworthiness that we have to report that came in was a matter of sentence case 561/10 that was reported where a person was found to after being investigated, the matter was picked up by the banks and reported to us, and the matter is currently an investigation involving 700 investors that were defrauded of 340 million rand. But that's still an investigation. But this is the result of a report from the bank. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much to the DPCI. Honourable members, we're going to take literally a 5-minute tea break. Then we will come back for questions on these 2 presentations. It seems at this stage that the presentation on the 2 units, we will stand over, we'll just decide on a new date, maybe even tomorrow. And then we will go to the KZN after that half an hour of engagement on these 2 reports. So members, 5 minutes. Thank you very much.
Bye. Mm-hmm.